this episode, I'd like to share with you a little bit more about the pain of my heartbreak and the concept of time.
My name is Lisa, and welcome to the Miscellany Podcast, where I share interesting but true experiences. This is the second part of a two-part story. If you haven't yet heard the first part, please listen to it before proceeding. It is the story of Melanie and her relationship with her mother, the ups and downs, the scotch and pizza, and some of the ways they shaped each other's lives. Ultimately, this led to heartbreak, when Melanie lost her mother and knew life was never going to be the same again. This second part is Melanie dealing with the loss of her mother. If part one was about how her mother's presence affected her, then part two is about how the void of losing her mother affects her just as greatly.
We use cliches to help us make sense of things, but I'm really sorry to tell you that there's some things that time just can't heal. They might not be the gaping, weeping wounds that they start life as, but they're still there, leaving damage that's really too great to ever heal. In the last episode, I told you that my heart broke. What I didn't tell you was that 3 months before her 60th birthday, my brilliant, amazing mother was taken from us. So I'm going to tell you this as a couple of stories. The first is the before, which is just enough context to provide a frame for the first day, the first week, the first 6 months, and then the first year. See, Mum didn't want us to focus on the day that she died. We didn't even include it on the memorial cards, but bloody hell, she had a way of timing that gave us dates we'd never forget. You see, I'm a massive fan of disaster movies, earthquakes, tsunamis, end of the world stuff. I guess having not been exposed to natural disasters in my life, my escape is through movies. And around the time of Mum's illness, the movie was 2012. That was what I was watching. You might remember that the movie 2012 was about the date that the Mayan calendar said would be the end of the world. It was the 21st of December 2012. And in a way, that was the end of the world for me, because that was the date that the doctors told us that we'd be lucky to have a few more weeks with her. It was the day the machinery of death started. It was the day I called all of her dear friends to say, "You need to come in now." It was the day I started to resent the other people in her life taking that time away from us. For the next 10 days, there was a lot going on, briefing friends and relatives about what was happening, coordinating shifts so that she had people around but not too many, liaising with nurses and doctors to ensure she was comfortable but coherent, being the eldest daughter, being the eldest sister. All these tasks gave me a sense of purpose, these artificial feelings of control, a way of avoiding dealing with any of my feelings. These all got pushed aside to help Mum keep being herself for as long as possible. So we asked her to read books, which we recorded for future grandchildren, so they could hear her voice. We encouraged her to talk about anything, so we had more stories to learn from. We shared presents as if she'd be there to enjoy them. We ventured into the rose garden for photos and anything to keep making memories for as long as we could. And when all of these options were exhausted, we read to her from the books that she carried with her everywhere. And then she was gone. Someone covered her face. It might have been me. More phone calls to make, an efficient cleaning of the room, less than 2 weeks of accumulated stuff all into bags into the car. We were left to finish 1 year and start another, without her, without so much thinking about the date, huh? And then there was the first day after. The first day is just an exercise of forgetting. The easiest way to deal with the situation is to get the hell out of there. So who was I to break a life of avoidance? So Jason and I went on a long drive. We didn't talk about it. In fact, I don't actually think we spoke at all. My usually loquacious husband curbed all of his natural instincts and was silent. Actually, he might have talked, but I really didn't hear anything. On the way home, we picked up beer, which was useful for numbing and distraction. And at the end of the day, I sat on the cool kitchen floor, listening to, but not hearing the music in the dark. Reality turned the first day into the first week. The first week was more of the same, but there was no running away from responsibilities. So I turned to the tasks to complete. things to plan, funerals, caskets, flowers, memorial cards, decisions to be made, legal stuff, the eulogy. All those tasks to complete, all of those wonderful things to do to keep busy, that coupled with supportive friends who didn't push me to talk about stuff, meant I could gather all of those sad and bad feelings and push them into a dark place. They didn't deserve my acknowledgement. They just sat in that cold, dark place as if they didn't exist. The eulogy was a great task to focus energy into, talking to family and friends, gathering stories to add, making sure that their memories were reflected in her story. I think it's one of my best pieces of writing, and I'm still really proud of it. It's like a love letter that she would never read or hear. I cried at the funeral. There were a few sobs, but it was mainly that constant leaking of the eyes and the catch in the throat that makes talking impossible. It was too much to be able to read the eulogy, which just made the leaking even worse. It was a colourful and, to an extent, a happy affair. We had everyone wear her favourite colour, purple. We matched the service to the music that she'd chosen and the slideshow with "I Am Woman, Hear Me Roar." We recorded it. Afterwards, we drank Piper Heidsieck and Alicante Boucher. And then it was over. My agnosticism turned to atheism. No loving God would have let her die. I went back to work the next week. The first 6 months went so quickly. If the first day was running away and the first week was keeping busy, then the first 6 months was just total avoidance. It was literally business as usual, with a twist. I couldn't talk about it. I was so unable to process my feelings when it came to calling the service providers to discontinue electricity and the other routine things that needed to be done. I was just completely mute. My job's done. My sister made all the calls that needed to be made. She did all the heavy lifting that I couldn't, bearing up under the emotional weight that we were all carrying. No photos of her in the house, no audio of her voice, no videos. There was no way I could talk to people about this. I mean, they'd say, with all love and sympathy in their voices, "I'm so sorry for your loss." What do you know about what I'm going through? She was the best, most amazing person, and you feel sorry for my loss? This isn't a loss. This is so much worse. I could not bring myself to say that she was dead. There were about 100 euphemisms for this, and I used all of them. It was an obscenely short period of time that I went back to work, and the great task I was focused on was complete and total avoidance. I deflected conversations. I changed the subject. It was literally business as usual. I kept all of those sad and bad emotional feelings locked away in that dark place. But it wasn't really business as usual, because now there was this sharp edge to my personality that had never been there before. There was a speed to anger when before there was tolerance, an inability to hide frustration when before there was patience. I was coping, but I wasn't crying. There were a few tears at what would have been her 60th birthday at the restaurant that she wanted to go to. We were looking out on that stunning view of Sydney Harbour, and I was just completely empty inside, focusing all my energy on pushing those sad and bad feelings down was the only thing that let me carry on. But, you know, of course, they don't stay hidden forever. Suppressed feelings just hide until they're ready to be unhidden. And unhidden they decided to be. They showed up again near the 6 month mark, which was around my birthday. She was gone. Gone forever. The length of forever was just too overwhelming. I couldn't breathe. My whole body was shaking and hyperventilating. Those feelings were all unhidden at the same time. It was this complete sensory overload. Just don't touch me. Jason was standing there. "What do you need? What can I do?" "No, I can't breathe." He held the phone out. "Do you want to talk to your sister?" "No, no, no." "Your brother?" "No." I couldn't even articulate my pain. I couldn't add mine to theirs. He dialed a number for the longest friend I've got and put it in my hand. "It's Samantha." I'm just incoherently babbling at her. She says, "Yes, I know, that's true, yes, and in all the right places," she says those right words. I'm calming down and Jason's able to get close enough to me to be able to pat my back. that explosion of emotion released all of those well-hidden feelings, all of the sad, bad feelings that had been building up. But still, no photos in the house, no audio, no movies. I allowed myself to experience a little bit more, but not too much. It was stressful and a fine line to judge. So by the end of the first year, I'd been to a counsellor and talked about it. It didn't really do much good. I mean, what's the point of talking about something that's already happened? You can't change it. It's done. It's gone. Doesn't bring her back. At some stage, I became aware that I started to sing to the radio, and every now and then, that sign that I was allowing myself to have some feelings, some happy feelings, but I still couldn't talk about it. I still deflected. It's been 5.5 years now, and around the 5th anniversary, I watched some videos of her and read some of her writing. I am singing to the radio regularly. I have a few pictures in my house. I don't wince when I hear her voice or see her writing, and most importantly, I can tell stories about her. I can tell stories about her to my gorgeous nephew. I can tell stories about her without getting that hitch in my throat that happens when I think that he'll never get to know her. I've probably now told you more than I've even told my friends. I think my friends accept my way of dealing with things and don't push me to talk about it. They don't push me for more. So when we get back to where we first started, time healing all wounds. Well, time hasn't healed this wound, and I really don't anticipate that it will. It's not the gaping, festering thing that it used to be, but it's still there. And if you meet me, you might not even notice it. But I can tell you I certainly do.
The Miscellany is hosted by the Gawler Broadcasting Association. Thank you to the GBA team for just being awesome. Music is Daydream Heartbeat by Pottington Bear. Please subscribe for future episodes. Like the Miscellany Podcast and GBA Gawler Broadcasting Association on Facebook. And hug your loved ones tight. The Miscellany will be back in the new year.